Welcome to the second episode of the Fearlessly Free podcast. Thank you so much once again for the feedback. It's been really positive and really encouraging. So I just wanted to kind of just get stuck in. For those of you that missed out on the first episode, by all means, be sure to listen and subscribe. Go back and listen to hear what I discussed in the last episode. Just to kind of give a recap, what I discussed was about public embarrassment by leadership in the church. And I spoke about one of the really embarrassing experiences that I encountered in one of the churches that I attended. And do you know what, guys? Can I just have a moment of transparency, please? Talking about what I've gone through, number one, I'm really thankful at the fact that, you know, I'm able to talk about it without wanting to gouge out anybody's eyes. Like, because there was a time where I wanted to go and drill off people's front doors and do some serious harm. But thank the Lord, you know, he's done a work in me. Amen, amen, Jesus, you know, he real, okay. But no, real talks, guys, like, we thank God that he is able to heal, like, seriously. But in the midst of all of that, I think what's kind of been brought to the surface for me is this feeling of, like, embarrassment and shame. And, you know, like, I was listening back to the podcast, like, whilst I was editing it and stuff like that. And I was thinking to myself, Selena, but big Selena like you, yeah, the one who's confident, the one who speaks her mind, you allowed people to do that to you. Like, you sat down in silence and you allowed people, and you got to bear in mind, guys, like, I ain't even told you the half of everything. And you know, I don't think it's really necessary for me to go into every single, you know, experience that I've had. But, you know, because also as well, some of the, you know, not all of the experiences were bad. Some of them were actually really good. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just when bad things happened, I didn't question them. And there's this sense of, like, embarrassment. I'm just like, so, like, really? You allowed the dirty bungle people them to go pour the whole big, big bottle of oil over your good, good head and then to tell you to lose weight in front of the whole church? And I'm like, see, what happened to you? How you allowed that? Like, you know them ones where, you know, I talked about the MJ moment. Like, you know, it's so funny. I was on the phone to one of my friends today and she was like, Selena, what's MJ? Is that Master Jesus? For all of you that didn't know what MJ was, it's Michael Jackson, yeah, the king of pop, yeah. I was referencing his song Man in the Mirror, yeah. So basically, like, I had my MJ moment this week and I was like, nah, real talksy, like, when you really deep it, like, you went through that and you never tell anybody about them underneath. You never tell anybody about themselves, eh? When you really deep the thing, you really let the people them go mash up your self-esteem and take away your confidence and all these things, eh? Like, no, real talks. Like, I actually feel like, wow, Selena. Clearly, I mean, obviously, we thank God, yeah, like, I actually am not the person that I was, like, 2 years ago, let alone, like, 5 and 10 years ago. I can honestly say with my chest that I am, you know, that my confidence, my self-confidence has been restored. And any inhibitions and fears that I had, I no longer have. But, you know, when you go through things in life, guys, and you think, rah, who was that back then? Because when I really check it, half of the people that I went to church with back then, I can't lie, yeah, I would actually walk past them today. As the Selena that I am today, I actually would. And one thing that my big sis said to me when I left the church was, Selena, like, don't beat yourself up, because a lot of those relationships were circumstantial. And that brought so much peace to me, because I can't lie, it just makes me think, wow, these are people who I just, you know, spent a huge chunk of my time with. And all now, where are they, please? Do I even have their numbers in my phone? Do you even have my number in your phone anymore? You know, like that. Like, seriously, there were people that, you know, lived in my house. Like, do you know what I mean? There were people that when they were broke, yeah, couldn't feed themselves and their pitney, I would draw into my bank account and make sure that cupboards were full. You understand? Like, it was, this is no joke. And you know when you have like, what do you call it? Like last, you know, the Lord's Supper and, you know, when you do, Jesus, me forget what the thing called. What the thing called again? Communion. Yes, communion. You can tell I'm not in church on a regular these days, innit? Me forget the thing. So I'm back in the room. So you know when you used to have like the communion service, and then sometimes you might wash the people them feet. Obviously there was a lot of service, do you know what I mean? And anyone that knows me, anyone really knows me, they know that if I do something, it's from my heart. I'm not doing it because it's I feel under duress and stuff like that. And that's why I kind of feel like a bit embarrassed, because I'm like, I'm not doing things under duress. I didn't do things under duress, but then at the same time, I allowed myself to be subjected to some real shite. However, it's been encouraging to hear some of the responses from some of my girls and family members, because they're like, Selena, you've got like nothing to be embarrassed about, you know, and life is about a journey. And it would be embarrassing if I was still in that place and I didn't see anything wrong about being in that place. It's growth and it's evolvement. Is that even a word? Like, you know, I've got an A star in English. Like, I'm just here making up words. Hey, Dictionary of Selena Paris. But yeah, so it's evolving when you can look back in hindsight and be like, wow, I don't even recognize that person. So I just wanted to kind of like get that out there, because as you journey with me on this podcast, you'll see that I'm actually quite a transparent person. So thank God for the wake up call. Like, I got the memo, and I've got this tattoo of a butterfly, and butterflies mean so much to me, in that, you know, you're this ugly like caterpillar like crawling on the ground, and then you just transform into this beautiful butterfly, and you shed that old skin and you grow your wings and you're able just to fly and display your beautiful colors. So like beautiful and special and precious, like in that true form, like in your truest state. Like, it looks like that, you know, you'll be a caterpillar for time. It feels like, I'm sure the caterpillar is probably like, wow, this is kind of like, it's a bit long, crawling on leaves and trees and on the dirty ground. And then one day your form just changes and you are this amazing, beautiful creature that is able to fly without being contained and able to just be free. And for me, I thank God that I am now that butterfly. However, I'm like, raw, see, how you did met the people them just, you know, mush your dancer, yeah? And, you know, this whole over-submission thing. And like, I came from a really abusive household and had to flee like domestic violence. Me and my mom and my sister, you know, we had to go into a woman's refuge and stuff like that. And, you know, I rebelled against like, you know, my abusive father, and I got my confidence and my voice back. And I was like, yes, Selena against the world, like no one can mess with me. And then two twos, I step into the church. and there's this, it's almost as though it's like a regression. Do you know what I mean? That's how I, when I look back, I'm like, raw, this is a bit of a regression, Selena. Like, you really allowed the people them to break you down spiritually. And I think about the place, I think about who I am as a person by nature. One thing that, you know, my grandmother, God rest her soul, she and like my parents drilled into me, like the importance of respecting your elders. And when you go into church, like, you know, it's about listening to the elders in the church and respecting them and so on and so forth. And, you know, in the Black culture as well, the Black community, particularly like the older generation, they come from, you know, they drilled into us that, you know, if your elders are talking to you, you do not disrespect them. You don't ask questions. You don't challenge them. And I think that there was a slight imbalance, oh my gosh, that's an understatement, right? I think there was an imbalance when I walked into church, because, you know, you see these elders and, you know, obviously it's a Black church as well. So even more so, it's like, oh my gosh, those are aunties and uncles and great aunts and uncles. They're not your blood, but in our community, that's how it is. Do you know what I mean? And so you see them and they're talking to you, and they might behave in a certain way, but you don't question it. And I think that's something that we need to really look at and address, particularly when we know as adults now that we've grown up and we've become adults. You know, I know of family members who were molested at a young age, and family members didn't do anything about it to protect them. It was a case of suck it up and, you know, this too shall pass, or, you know, or it never happened. And you were, you know, the victim was made out to be a liar. And there's that whole culture of, if an elder is talking to you or if an elder is doing something to you, you have to accept that. And I think when I started my Christian walk, I was 20 years old. Now, I work in social care, and back then, 20 years old, I thought I made it. I was like, hey, like, I'm an adult, I was living by myself. I was like, yeah, paying my own bills, I can do this thing. But now, working as a professional in the social care and education, I can, like, a 20-year-old is a youth, like, your child, innit? And that's not to take away or discount, you know, their journey from adolescence into adulthood. But the fact remains that there is a level of maturity that has not yet been developed within them. And so, therefore, you're a youth, innit? You know, like that. And so, for me, I think about the child mentality that I walked in, that I walked into the church with at the age of 20. And I saw these elders, and, you know, they prayed, and we fed the homeless, and we did all these good things. And then the bad things started to creep in. And you turn a blind eye, because now it's a case of, like, the pastor's like auntie, or they're like your second mum, like, or you start calling the pastor dad, and, like, do you know what I mean? And make me tell you, as I look back now, yeah, hey, you know, when I fell into those ways and I started to call, like, the pastor, like, dad or, like, mum, it was just culture. That's what we did. Like, do you know what I mean? There's this whole culture of spiritual father, spiritual mother and stuff like that. And that's cool if that's the setup that God has designed specifically for you and a particular individual in the church. But when it just becomes a force of habit, lines are blurred, familiarity breeds contempt. And I believe the spiritual abuse and the church hurt is a byproduct of the culture within the Black community. So when I think about the spiritual abuse and stuff like that, my mind is already conformed, as it were, and trained just by tradition and culture that happened, that was instilled and formed in me way before I even walked into the doors of the church. And as a result of that, you know, guards are then let down because it's like, oh, that's auntie, that's mum, that's dad, that's like, do you know what I mean? The reality is, people, like, I only have one mother and one father, you know? As disjointed as my relationship might be with my dad, yeah? That is my what, me have the one papa, yeah? And me have the one mother, you understand? So, you know, I think, like, again, it's about using your common sense and your wisdom when you are walking into these environments where, yes, the people might be the same colour as you, but the reality is that they are strangers until you really get to know them and you test the spirit and you see the fruits that they bear. You have to see, like, do they bear good fruit? Do they bear bad fruit? Because you have to test the spirit. And, you know, you don't have to be praying in the third heavens for 325 days to identify whether someone is of God or not. Like, let's dispel those Pentecostal emotionalism that underpins wrong teaching that tells you that, you know, you've got to walk with God and fast with God and get your prayer shawl out and put your sackcloth and ashes on, like, bun all that. Like, what can you see before you? Like, what can you see before you? Is the person nice? Yeah. Are they bearing good fruit? And is it real? Is it authentic? Like, you can always tell when someone's fake. But what happens is we walk into the church and, you know, there is this whole culture of, you know, family. There's this culture of family that takes place prematurely. And as a result of that, you're kind of drawn in real quick and you put your guards down. Because the reverend or the pastor or the minister or the deaconess reminds you of your Aunt Val, or do you know what I mean? Or Uncle Derek. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like that. And I feel, for me, you know, when I was in my time of reflection, I was like, Rossi, do you know what? That's really what happened, you know, because mum and dad taught me to have manners. When I walked in to the church, those are the values that I walked into that environment with. But without wisdom, there was this lack of wisdom that I had. You know, when you see the leaders behave a certain way, conduct themselves a certain way. And in psychology and in social care, we are taught about this whole nurture nature. And you become a product of how you are nurtured. So whether that be through teaching, through prayer, through counsel, you know, in the context of the church, you are then a product of how you are nurtured. You are also then a product of your environment, the nature. So the habits, the traditions of that church, the belief systems of that church, the behaviours of that church. And if you're not careful, mind sharp, you start taking on behaviours of the other people in the brethren in the church. Like, do you know what I mean? And so, you know, it's something that we have to be so mindful of, because God has made us to be, you know, we're all individuals. However, it's like, you know, if you're not careful and if you don't have your wits about you and you don't walk with discernment, you can walk into these environments and completely lose yourself. And I think that's what happened to me. Like, I lost myself in it. Like, you know, it's multifaceted what happened to me. I think it's in terms of, there was that whole thing of having respect for your elders. You don't question them, so on and so forth. Then it's that whole thing of, you know, you're eager to learn about God and stuff like that. And sometimes you, and also I think there's that other layer of, you know, you kind of get drawn in, you know, drawn in by the things that happen, like the spiritual manifestations of God's spirit and stuff. The Bible refers to it as signs and wonders and miracles. And the reason why I have a strong conviction that Jesus Christ is real is not because it's something that's been drummed into my head by my gran. My gran's words just ring in my head, like, you know, when I was 17 and I was leaving New York after having lived there for 3 months, my gran's words to me, like, as I was leaving for the airport, was, when you get back to the UK, make sure you find yourself a church and you love the Lord and you serve him with all your heart, right? And I was like, yes, gran, of course, like, do you know what I mean? You can't argue with Mother Paris, boy. When I got back to the UK, I didn't follow through with what she said. I didn't keep my word at the time. But a few years later, I do feel as though I felt like the Lord calling me to have a relationship with him and just to really connect with him. So I was just at home in my flat, sitting in my room, and, you know, I just gave my heart to the Lord there and then. And I think what was so beautiful about that is the fact that there was no, you know, I wasn't in a church, there was no one laying hands on me or anything like that. It was just me and God, and that's how I started off my relationship with God. Where the waters got muddied was when I started to attend church, and the very first church that I got baptized in back in 2003 was really nice. I would have actually stayed there. However, I live in South London. That church was in East London, so I didn't, you know, it wasn't sustainable for me. So I then thought, okay, let me try the church that my mum's attending, which was quite local to us. And that is the church where I can actually say, in hindsight, I can say definitely that it was a cult. Like, do you know what I mean? It was very much, very controlling, very damning. There was a lot of humiliation by that particular reverend. It was a female, and she, you know, had so many unresolved issues. Now, as I look back as an adult within my own right, I can see that, do you know what, babes, you really had a lot of issues that you did not deal with, and that then corrupted your character, you know. And for me, it's like, you know, I look at what I went through there, and I just think to myself, wow. I guess for me, again, it was that whole thing of, you know, these are older people in the church. They're, you know, it's people that look like you. And so it's that whole thing of, like, what I was saying in terms of the culture of, you don't challenge and you don't, you know, you don't question, you know, your elders and stuff like that, out of respect. And I think that's a message that within itself, That's something that we have to learn from. And I think that it's important that the message that is given for people who do want to embark on a relationship with God within a church environment, that you have to walk in there with your wits about you. And so in terms of the whole overemphasis of submission, it was hella crazy. You know, I remember I'd only stayed in that church for about 2 or 3 years because I just had enough of their foolishness. Like, it was just too much. It was just ridiculous. And I remember when I left there, it was probably maybe about a year or so after I left or something like that. I was turning 25 that year, and I had approached the vicar of the church hall my church at the time used to use for Bible studies and prayer meetings and stuff like that. And when I approached him, I greeted him by his name. He didn't remember me. So I said, oh, you know, I'm Selena, that used to attend such and such ministries and so on and so forth. But on the day of the actual party, I received a letter from this reverend. And she was spitting, like, anger and abuse. It was just this barrage of, like, you know, just cussing. Like, she sent a letter to me and my mum, you know, saying that, you know, we shouldn't be using the church name for our functions, especially now that, you know, we're no longer associated with the church. And, you know, and she told some of the members that I'd actually formed, you know, relationships with who I'd invited. She told them not to attend. And it was just really like, I was like, what? Like, it's just disgusting. And, you know, I look at the churches that I've been to, and there was this common theme of over submission. You have to do things their way. I remember the last church that I went into, and, you know, you had people who wanted, you know, young, like amazing individuals that I went to church with who wanted to start up their own businesses and stuff like that, and had their own businesses. And there was this thing of whereby you had to submit the business to, you know, under the leadership of the church. And, you know, I remember at the church prior to that, when, you know, my best friend had got was getting baptized, and I'd said to the pastor, you know, it's my best friend's birthday, I'm going to be going to her baptism. And I didn't hear from him. He you know, didn't respond, and normally he's quite good at responding. And I'm like, what's going on? And then I think there was a part of me that was like, oh, maybe he didn't like the way that I kind of addressed him. And that's the thing as well. As much as I do come from this, you know, that my moral grounding is that you do respect your elders and stuff like that, there is also that side of me that, in actual fact, Selena, you're an individual and you live your life how you please. You know, I'm not out here trying to, do you know what I mean, hurt anyone. I'm living my life. My best friend just got saved. I've been praying for her to get saved. And now here's the fruits of those prayers. Like, she's getting baptized. Like, do you know what I mean? So I thought, okay, let me just kind of like make, you know, approach this in a peaceful way. Asked him respectfully, you know, all the airs and graces. Oh, pastor, you know, please can I be released? All that foolishness, because I was a leader in the in that particular church at the time as well. And he didn't, it's like he didn't want to release me, like, you know, because our church at the time was having a function on the same day. And there's this overemphasis of submission. And when I left the church in 2014, I had my time of like real reflection, because I had to look at myself and be like, Selena, what is it about you that causes you to go to environments like that? I think it's one thing to go there and then you see that it's not cool, so you kick out straight away. But it's another thing to actually stay there. And like I said, the whole duration of this time has been was 12 years. And so after that 12 years, I was done. I was just like, I don't subscribe to this. I'm not subscribing to go into a place to find God and to learn about him and come up with constant flipping abuse and judgment and condemnation and guilt and shame. Like, it's like, it's not, it doesn't say that in the Bible. So why there's no correlation between what is being displayed and portrayed at church and the behaviours that we see at church in comparison to what I read in the Bible. And that was always like this war that I was having within myself. And, you know, as I got older, I think with age comes maturity, and you do start to get your voice back. And I would start to question things. And there was oftentimes, we, you know, we make jokes about it now, me and the guys that used to go to that church, that the last church where we had to shut down. And we make jokes about this back room, because the church was in their house and they had this, you know, they had two reception rooms and there was the back room. We called one of the reception rooms the back room. And it was like, that was the room where you was just gunned by the pastors. Like, do you know what I'm saying? It was just, it's just really bad. Like, I remember another occasion whereby, you know, I went out on a date with this guy and he wasn't saved. And I must have told one of the, you know, one of the girls, you know, she being the woman's leader at the time, one of the women's leader at the time, said, you know, I need to kind of speak to the pastors about it. And I'm thinking, girl, bye. But at the time, I still was very much, you know, I was still very much in the church. But by that time, I'd kind of like, I just didn't care. I was doing my own thing, kind of thing. And I think I know for me, the reason why I was, I didn't really subscribe to their laws by that point, but I felt I had a duty to stay in that church because there were people that spiritually I was responsible for. Being, you know, being a minister, I took that very seriously. You know, I made a vow before God and man to, you know, serve God's people and to serve with in truth and with in love. And I took that seriously. So towards the end, I would say maybe, you know, I got ordained in 2012. And I would say maybe shortly after being ordained, up until the time that 2 years later in 2014, when it was shut down, I guess I kind of tapped out. And there were, that's when I started, I guess that's when I started to really kind of question things. And a lot of the times I would be, you know, I was called into the back room or to have heated discussions and arguments with like the pastors, because, you know, there were things that I was questioning. However, I know for me, you know, I think in my time of reflection, I'm thinking, why did you stay for so long? And it really was because I did really care about the people that I was responsible for. So I felt like I was in, there was this tug of war. It was this juxtaposition of, I want to go, but I have a duty to stay. And I guess also as well, I felt as though because I didn't, I was starting to lose trust in the leadership. I felt like there was only kind of like a few of us that I guess the members kind of related to. And so I felt as though I had a duty to stay for them, you know, because at the time the pastor was going off doing his foolishness, and his wife was trying to hold it down as best she could as well. But, you know, it was really like the ministers that were kind of like at the, you know, doing the main part of it. The pastor, because he was living a double life, he pushed us to the forefront. You know, we did the preaching, we did the Bible teachings, we led the prayer meetings, we, you know, we did all of that. He didn't preach at all. And that's because he knew he was living a double life. He knew his hands weren't clean. And so, you know, I felt like if I'd left, what would have happened to, you know, those people that I was responsible for? Again, that's a valuable lesson I've learned. I'm not God. I'm not Jesus. Like, do you know what I mean? I have to put myself first. And it's important to put yourself first, not in a selfish way, but to check in with yourself. Are you in a relationship? Are you in an environment that will that is causing you harm and great detriment to your soul and to your mind and your overall mental well-being? And if that is the case, irrespective of those who might be looking up to you, irrespective of those who you might be responsible for, you know, you have to put yourself first. It's like when you are on an aeroplane, they say you have to put that oxygen mask on first before you can put it on your children, those who are dependent on you. So it's like I've learned a valuable lesson from that, and I will never put myself in that position again. And I look at this over submission within the church to leadership. And yes, it's definitely a case of, you know, these people have made themselves to be idols. But then I also think, okay, well, what is the backdrop? What is behind this? And I think when we look at the Black church, it had me kind of thinking about, these are just, I guess, my thoughts and my reflections, having left the church and, you know, gone on my own process of healing and restoration. I look at like slavery, and I think that, you know, in a society that we live in the Black community, where there is so much, like, you know, I look at like the Black men in our community, and I look at, you know, the women in the Black community, and I look at the fact that, you know, they were stripped and they were oppressed and humiliated, and our men were emasculated, so much so that there is now transgenerational trauma that our community is still dealing with, is still carrying, is still trying to overcome. And I look at, like, you know, the Black man within our community, and, you know, I see the kings that they are, the leaders that they are, like, and I think to myself, what's happened to the black man of today and to the black family, the black community, the black culture of today? What has happened to it? Because, you know, when we look at, like, you know, the black churches of today, you know, that is the black community, that is part of the black community going to a place of worship together. But if they've walked into that environment with that transgenerational trauma and those unresolved issues that are just being recycled from generation to generation to generation, then that is going to impact and infect and corrupt the church practices. It's going to infect the way that a church is run. It's going to infect and impact the way that a pastor views his congregation. It's going to affect the way that he or she leads their congregation and teaches the Bible. And so I look at, like, you know, slavery, and I look at the fact that, you know, because I've done a lot of research in terms of, you know, Christianity and slavery, and, you know, there's this whole thing about the fact that it's a white man's religion and stuff like that. But, you know, in all the research that I've done, and even if there was no evidence or anything like that out there, the fact that historically, like, within the Bible, when you read the Bible, like, it weren't based in London, like, do you know what I mean, where the white man dwells, like, do you understand, or in Hampshire or Yorkshire, where the white man dwells, like, it's like, it was in Ethiopia and Egypt, and these are places where black people, you know, black descendants, African descendants dwelled, like, they lived, like, do you know what I'm saying? And, you know, when you look at, like, even, like, the descriptions of, some of the people in the Bible, you know, when you look at, like, Samson, when you read in the book of Judges about Samson, it doesn't say that his hair was straight. Do you know what I mean? It says his hair was like wool. Like, you know, I've got afro hair, like, my hair's like wool, isn't it? Like, you know, and I look at that and I'm just like, okay, cool. So for me, that solidified my belief in that Christianity isn't a white man's religion. I believe that God died for all of us. I don't think he's a respecter of race. So this isn't a message about, you know, God is the God of the black people. I feel like I know that he's the God of all. And I say that to say, you know, again, backing that up with scripture, there's a scripture in Acts chapter 17, verse 26. It says, from one man, he made all the nations. So that's all the nations, that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. So that scripture alone talks about the fact that it's basically saying that from one man, so from God, yeah, that he made all nations. So that's black, white, Indian, Hispanic, Spanish, Italian, Jewish. He's made all different colours, creed, race, every kind of race you can think of, that we should all inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out our appointed times, so the times that we are to be born and the times that we are to die, in history and the boundaries of their land. So it's saying that, you know, he's marked out the times that we, that our lifespan, when we are to arrive on this earth, when we are to leave this earth, and where we are to live. And so, you know, when I, as much as I've, you know, I've done my research and I can see, yeah, that boom, there's black people in the Bible, and there's all different types of colours, different races and cultures in the Bible. That scripture lets me also know that God made every race. He made every colour. He knew where to place us around this world and in what time, in what century we are to be living in. Like, do you know what I mean? He made no mistake when he made you and I. And so I look at slavery and I look at the impact that it's had on the black culture. And, you know, when we look at very traditional Orthodox Christian churches, you know, they've got the stained glass windows of this white Jesus and this white Mary and so on and so forth. And obviously that stems from, you know, slavery. We know that. We're not ignorant to that fact. And I look at, like, the slave master, and I look at what his agenda was. And you know, when we look at the fact that the slave master felt that the black man was too inferior to have a relationship with God. Yeah. So he felt that, you know, that we were not entitled to have direct communication with God. And if, you know, and if we were going to have direct, you know, if we were going to have a relationship with God, they were going to dictate and control how that, how we were going to do that. And so, you know, we look at the Bible and we look at the, you know, I'm not talking about the different translations here. I'm talking about a specific Bible that was created for the Negro slaves. And you can find out more information about this if you go to Instagram. The Instagram handle is Museum of Bible. And on that page, it's within the actual museum, it's in Washington, D.C. They've got a hard copy Bible and it says the Holy Bible for the Negro slaves. And when you look at that Bible, parts of the Holy Bible were selected for the use to control the Negro slaves. This Bible was written in, was created in 1808. And through, and though it's called holy, it is deeply manipulative. Based on the King James Version, it omits all entries that express themes of freedom. They actually removed 90% of the Old Testament and half of the New Testament. So there's nothing in there, in that particular Bible, that expresses the love of God for the slaves, for the black people, for the people of colour. There's nothing in there that that expresses or displays God's desire for the black people to be free. It's solely control and it's solely manipulation and it's solely domination and deception and abuse. And it, and so me doing all this research throughout the past few years, it caused me to question, knowing the fact we cannot dispute that there is transgenerational trauma and there are transgenerational traits and issues and addictions and cycles and habits that we have inherited through the years, I cannot help but think that the black church culture that we have today and that we've seen over the recent years and over decades past are a byproduct of the teachings and the manipulation that was fed through the centuries, the centuries past from the teaching of slave masters. And, you know, that Holy Bible that was created, that Holy Bible, inverted commas, that was created solely for the Negro slaves. And I say that to say that I look at the black church of today and I look at our black community and I see so many correlations in that it's the same people that you see in the church, that you see in the in your community, people that you see in your home, people that you see in your family when you go to family gatherings. It's the same people. And if you have not made a conscious, concerted effort, a decision to say, do you know what? I'm not going to be a product of what my family members have gone through, of what my you know, my grandmother and my mother and my father and aunties and uncles have gone through, then unfortunately, yeah, message, yeah, you are going to repeat those practices. You are going to repeat those behaviours. You are going to repeat those attitudes and you are going to pass on those mindsets and those beliefs and those behaviour patterns onto those, onto your children and to the children around you in your family network. And so, for me, I feel so passionate about this, and I'm sure you can hear it in my voice. Ha! Take a breather, Cece. I feel so passionate about it because I feel like so many of us have become lost as a result of the transgenerational things that have been passed down through our generations. And it takes a person who is willing to confront, you know, the truth, to actually say, do you know what? Enough is enough. Because God's created all of us to have relationship with him. It was Satan's design, and it's always been his agenda to break that relationship. So, you know, we see it in the book of Genesis, you know, when he was a serpent, he was like, yo, babes, Eve, come eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Eat of it. It's not going to do you no harm. And he knew exactly the outcome of that. And the outcome of that was to break our relationship and our connection, a true relationship with God. But obviously God had another plan, and we know that. And that's, you know, when he created, you know, Jesus, he sent himself down in human form through Jesus for us to have, to be reconnected to God. However, that doesn't mean to say that Satan's agenda is then stopped. Like, he's still on an assignment. His job is to ensure that he gets as many people and he deceives as many people into walking away from a connection with God. And once he's done that with you, he'll move on to the next one and to the next one and to the next one. And we need to wake up to the fact that, you know what? God designed for each and every single one of us to walk with him in true relationship with him. Unfortunately, things have happened in times past. Am I angry about slavery? Am I angry about the oppression of my ancestors and the oppression that I still see today? Yes, I am. However, in addition to that, I cannot and will not allow the evil that is the main driving force behind all that oppression disconnect me from my relationship with God. There is no way I can do that. I will not allow myself to be disconnected from the power, the love, the anointing, and the authority that comes through walking with Jesus Christ. It's better to be on in a place of truth and power than it is to be on the side of evil and oppression, of oppression that stems from evil. It was Satan's intent to keep us in a place of oppression. And that has manifested in various different ways, whether that be through slavery, whether that be through Holocaust, whether that be through, you know, that's societal issues. That's on a greater scale. That's how he impacts masses of people on a greater scale. How he impacts us on a more smaller scale is, you know, through family issues, molestation, rape, and on a more individual scale, how he impacts us is through depression and addictions and, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. But my message today is, do you know what? Like, we can no longer be fooled. Like, the reality is that God has designed for us to have a relationship with him. Somewhere along the way, in whatever shape or form, that has somewhat been broken down. But there is still that opportunity for us to say, do you know what, God? Like, I choose you over religion. I choose you over the bad situations and the bad experiences that I've experienced in church. I choose you over the situations and the bad, horrific experiences that my family members or even I have gone through. I still choose to stay connected to you. And when we move away, when we move away from all the crap that we experience in life, in church, at work, in family, the fact remains is that there's a loving God who's still waiting on us to say, do you know what? I still desire you, innit? He's still calling you. He still loves you. He still wants to have relationship with you. And he will not stop calling you until he's ready to come back, you know, come back for us. So I say that to say that with this whole, you know, going back to this whole over submission, over emphasis of submission to leadership, I feel like there's a lot of layers that need to be pulled back and stripped away. Some pastors, you know, need to actually listen, need to look within themselves and look at, like, okay, what dysfunctions are within me? What transgenerational issues are within me? What family issues are within me that I've not yet resolved that are impacting and corrupting and polluting the way that I handle God's people. And people, you know, these leaders need to be held to account. And one day they will. The Bible lets us know that. Yeah. But I think on a practical level, you know, and that's another reason why I've started Fearlessly Free. On a practical level, you know, I've started it to start these conversations about like, yo, wake up. You're hurting and destroying innocent people, like people that just want to know about God and who just want to be connected to him and reconnect to him. And you're destroying that. What is that about? What is within you that has caused you to try and fight for the position of God in these people's lives? I know of people that, you know, who, like I said, like in my intro, I know of people who were ministers with me, like we got on ordained on the same day. They're not even about it no more. They're not even like, do you know what I'm saying? They're not even on this Jesus thing again, like because of things pastors have done, church leaders have done, deacons have done, ministers have done, and they need to be held to account. And yes, whilst we recognise that hurting people hurt people, the hurting people that are hurt, the people that are causing the hurt, they are the ones that need to actually get to a place of recognition and realisation and say, do you know what? I have some real deep-rooted issues and I need to step away from this pulpit. I need to put down all my church responsibilities, take my fingers out of all of the pies and just say, do you know what, God, fix me, deal with me. Because what is happening in the church today is so catastrophic. And, you know, when I first left the church in 2014, I felt like it was a spiritual tsunami. That is what I described it as. People came out of there suicidal. People came out of there and they have never been the same. Some of the people that I, you know, went to that particular church with, they will even say they, you know, they've either shared with me or I can see that they are a shell of who they truly, really are. And it breaks my heart that there are so many people out here putting themselves on pedestals, embarrassing people in church and condemning them and judging them and backbenching them. They cannot see how damaging it is. It's soul destroying. And there's people out there that are left questioning if God is even real. Like, God, where are you? How did you let this happen to me? And I believe, like, you know, in creating a platform like Fearlessly Free, we are able to then have dialogue and look at ways to tackle this head on and to actually put a stop to this once and for all. Eventually, what I want to do is create some kind of regulatory board, similar to like Ofsted or CQC, whereby it's like an accountability board where churches are held to account for how they actually safeguard the well-being of their members. And the purpose of that board is simply because when you look more so in the black church community, there is no such body. For example, the church that myself and the other members, the other ministers had to shut down, that senior pastor, he's now gone off to Denmark. And he's probably repeating the same behaviours, the same things over there and harming another set of people. Now, that is because there is no regulatory body in place that holds churches to account. There's nothing in place that holds them to account as to how they actually safeguard them. There's nothing currently in place right now that specifically deals with preventing spiritual abuse. And so eventually that's something that I do, I will be setting up. If you know any lawyers, any people in governance, any people that have an understanding in terms of safeguarding and policy and so on and so forth, please email me at freefearlessly@gmail.com. I want to hear from you. I'm not just a talker, I'm a doer. I like to match my actions with my words. And this is something that I'm extremely passionate about and I want to see an end to it. So my final words to you guys are, be free, be absolutely free, be completely free in who you are, embrace who you are, embrace and love who you are. And should you decide to, remain in church, or whether you're still kind of on the fence like how I am, just remember that God loves you and He did not design influence these people to treat you in the way that you and I have been treated. He's a God of love. He's a God of grace. And He wants to have relationship with us. And He wants us to really experience the love that He has for us. And yeah, so that's it really. That's all I'm going to say on this particular episode. The next episode will be entitled Letter to the Pastor. And I will be covering a few points from the post that Cornelius Lindsay put up. So it will be point one. Does the leadership teach that God must speak to them first before God will speak to you? Point 11, every decision a person makes in their personal life has to be approved by leadership. And then point 3, does he teach that his church is the only true church? So I'll be unpacking that, because there's a lot of things that these pastors out here are doing, and some of them are not even called by God, but they've placed themselves in those positions. And that's something that I'm going to be tackling in the next episode. The next episode's going to be out on Monday, the 11th of November. Stay tuned. And I want to leave you with a final thought by Angela Tilger, and it's entitled Always Live Your Truth. The good, the bad, the ugly, all of those parts of you are important, and they were all given to you for a reason. Living authentically means standing unapologetically in the truth of who you are and never sacrificing it for anyone or anything. Guys, live unapologetically, be completely free, be completely fearless, because that is how God created you to be. And so as I close, I just want to say thanks for listening. Don't forget to comment and rate the podcast, and definitely subscribe so you don't miss a beat. Have an amazing week. Stay blessed. Stay fearlessly free. Take good care of yourselves. Bye.